final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch cat fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those Muslim old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
than a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
goddamn is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Hello everybody, you're listening to Mad Science. Osha's is here. I posted a couple videos over there in the shazizradio.com / super chat HTML room there. One of which is the most recent video that I've posted over on YouTube. If you haven't been to my YouTube channel, might check that out if you're into alternative energy and mad science and such. The first video that I posted over there is my latest video that can't keep getting on there. It's a must-see. That's what the name of it. Also, Stephen Gibbons was kind enough to post a couple of links over there regarding Gerard Morin. which is what I'd like to talk about. Really like to get that man on the radio sometime and have a good talk with him about his theories on electricity and such. But anyway, going back to this video that I posted, must see, it's a pretty impressive little deal right there. If you've ever seen a hard drive motor and actually tore into it to see inside this hard drive motor and then watch this particular video, it's pretty amazing what's going on inside there. See, the standard method of producing electricity is we literally create a brute force magnetic field that the lines of flux cross the copper wire and induce a voltage inside the windings. Well, what I first came aware of a long time ago here, really hasn't been all that long ago, that Matthew Drummond showed me a video that they were using washing machine pumps out of the newer washing machines, and they were getting them up to some serious high RPMs and coming out with some pretty amazing voltages. So I looked into that right there, and also Matthew Drummond's, if you haven't checked out his YouTube channel, run over there, check that out. Over there on YouTube, he's got some pretty good experiments that he works with, repurposing all kinds of stuff and showing how much capabilities he's been able to get just out of the washing machine pumps, motors that he's been using. But whenever you take one of these hard drive motors apart and you really sit down and study what's going on inside there, it begs the question, is do we really know what we think we do about electricity? Because one wouldn't assume that this little tiny piece of machinery right here, this little piece of electronics, could actually produce as much energy as it actually does. Who would have thought it would ever been a generator, possibility for a generator anyway, because the way that these are set up is a AC, it's essentially a pulse motor. It has separate windings in there. There's actually two separate sets of wires that connect inside there. And if you look really super close inside there with the microscope or magnifying glass, there's a couple little pieces where they're connected that appear to potentially be some Hall effect sensors that would pick up the difference of the north and south field and basically pulse it in time. So it would be a tuned motor, essentially. Excuse me. Got to get some drink of my coffee here. Anyway, it's quite impressive that you can get as much energy as you can out of something so small. If you watch the video, you'll notice that I'm lighting up an entire strand of LEDs that are basically set up to run off of 120 volts AC. You also note in the picture that at the very least at some points I was getting 260 volts AC out of this little motor by running it with my Dremel. And so when you look at the inside of this thing and you see how little the wires are inside there, and then you match that up to like your average style generator, something different's going on here. And the magnet itself inside of these little motors is a continuous ring magnet that goes all the way around the outer wall of the deal. And at low RPMs, it doesn't produce very much at all. You can see that in, I actually did a video just for giggles, which is actually still posted in the link over there at shazizradio.com/superchat.html. There's one, if you jump over my YouTube channel, just Google Shaziz and go over my YouTube channel and look for the last two videos that I posted, one just for giggles and one must see. You can see in there where I basically was flipping it with my finger and getting the voltage going. And then I put a rubber band connected to from one to the other. And I ran one off of 9 volts AC. and then was able to get some higher voltage that way. And then I took the rubber band off and I put the Dremel onto the side of the deal, and I was able to get yet even higher. It was probably anywhere from 65 to almost 100 volts at some points. But I got to looking at this even more, and so I just for giggles went and did me another test on this thing, and I put the Dremel on the top of the deal so that I got the downward pressure on it and a better spin on that thing, and was able to achieve over 260 volts at one point, 360 volts AC off of this little motor. So that begs the question, if it's the number of turns on the on the copper wire, or the gauge of the copper wire, or is there something else going on in there? The ring magnet being completely surrounding the coil, this is essentially a stator motor is what it is. It's just like the direct drive motors in washing machines. And so just like the stator inside your electric start lawn mowers and a few other deals like that, that's basically the same type of windings that's going on inside there. Just less wire. And so, essentially, by raising the RPMs up, something is occurring inside there. I also posted some links in there about Gerard Morin, and should really go over and see a couple of these videos that he posted over there. One is the first one that I posted that he showed where he took a 2,500 watt generator and connected it to a 50 kV transformer. Some people call them pole pigs, but it's essentially a step down transformer that you'd see out on your normal power pole. Also, I guess there was also an update that he did as well. And anyway, he took this 2,500 watt generator and was running quite a substantial amount of things off of the deal. And he's trying to explain to people in there how electricity is radiation, basically radio frequencies and such, which is something that I've been alluding to for quite some time because of Tesla's technology and how Tesla's coil and a lot of his research had to do with how fast you're fluctuating the magnetic field and such. But the kicker for me is to see how impressive that these little bitty motors, these little bitty, I might as well call it a generator now, it's a motor generator, because you can actually take two of the motors, or two of the wires on the motor, and connect it to an AC power source, and then out the other side, actually draw off a voltage, a current off the other side. So it's essentially a motor generator already, without doing any modifications to the hard drive motor itself, simply running it off of an AC power supply. And keep in mind that in that video that I posted, the first one, just for giggles, you actually see me have to reach down and kickstart this thing to get it going, because the AC isn't being timed out like it would be as if it was connected to the circuit board in your PC. there's a circuit inside your PC that connects to your power supply that basically times this out because of the separation of these coils to flip that magnetic field back and forth in order to get that motor to turn. But it's also worth noting that when these are in your computer hard drive, I'm not exactly sure what the actual RPMs are. They are pretty well moving along. And so I would like to see a test done of a computer hard drive that was being ran by the normal power source from your PC, so that you could actually find out what the actual RPMs are. Excuse me, I don't know what's wrong with me here. So anyway, seems the higher you get these RPMs up, the higher the voltage rises. And so that's telling me that it's not necessarily the copper wire inside there that's making the difference. It's the disruption of that magnetic field. It's basically doing exactly what the Slayer exciter and the Tesla coil is doing. How you doing there, buddy? You're live on air.
Yeah, but I'm not live on mic.
yeah, it worked when they turned the mic on.
Yeah, RPM was a hard drive, mate. They come in various different speeds.
Cool.
Hang about, let me turn you off on the other page. I'll listen to you twice. The standard RPM of a PC hard drive is 5,400 RPM. But the big commercial hard drives can go up to 12,500.
Well, that's pretty doggone impressive, because I was under the impression that anything above 5,000 RPM, because I read the side of my Dremel, and it goes 5,000 to, I can't remember now, but it goes up to some serious RPM. But
yeah.
Anything above the 5,000 point right there, you start getting that effect where it's literally generating enough electricity to light up that entire strand of LEDs that normally runs off 120 volts AC at 60 hertz. That's pretty impressive. I mean, if you've ever seen inside of one of these little computer hard drive motors, there's really not much in there outside of a continuous ring magnet that is a ceramic magnet. And, a little stator inside there. A tiny stator, for that matter.
Well, contemporary hard drives generally run from 4,200 RPM to 15,000 RPM for the real top-end service.
Well...
Now, the very first hard drives started around about 1,200 RPM.
Well, what I'm fixing to say right here is probably going to get me shot, but... Or worse. Zeke's typed in the chat room. He said, "Congratulations, Shaziz. It appears you have achieved over unity, 110 volts ramped up to 130 volts, eh?" Well, in some sense, yeah. To honestly think about it, in some sense, they said you can't ever get out more than you put in. Now, on the voltage spectrum of the deal, just proved you can get way more out than you put in, and not just way more, three times more, because in the video, I show it goes up to 260 volts AC. I've had that thing run completely up to 360 volts AC on that meter. I mean, if you look and watch the video, whenever I'm turning that thing on, 200 volts is what it was set on the AC side. And it would get up to enough RPMs to literally put it over the high voltage side, which the high voltage side of the AC, my meter goes up to 700 volts. Now, so if we're just talking volts alone, yeah, it's over unity. That's flat out, because only 120 volts AC to run that. And I'm getting, the motor itself, you only have to have 12 volts. Ain't that what the standard hard drive runs at, about 12 volts?
Anything from 5 volts up.
And so, if you could run that thing at least 5,000 RPMs at 5 volts, and then use the other one connected to it to draw off 120 volts AC or higher, what do you think?
I don't. That's illegal. I wouldn't like to break the law. And you're kind of wrong about over unity, because there is one institution that's been getting out a lot more than people have been putting in for about 300 or 400 years. It's called the banking industry.
Oh yeah, well that's definitely. But see here, look, I'm not even advocating over unity. Alright,
well, they are. They've been doing it for a long time.
Well yeah, they get by with it too, but I wouldn't get by with it. Anyway, what I, I'm I'm not claiming over unity, and I'm not even looking for over unity. I'm not looking at to get more out more than I put in. Although I've seen it on multiple occasions that yeah, you're not putting in as much as you're getting out. Now, of course, we're going to get all back into the whole current watts and amps thing right there. But once again, I'm saying that. You don't need all the current watts and amps until you get to a certain point where you're going to be drawing off of any given device. And so, since all we're doing is literally moving energy from point A to point B, it doesn't matter what frequency range it's in until we decide to use it on the devices that we've already have around. Am I wrong?
No, Raymond's in the house.
How you doing, Raymond?
Hey, excellent. How you guys doing?
You got that industrial strength Texas air conditioner up and running?
I'm getting ready to get you a little.
Yeah.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
Yeah, no, that's what I was telling him. He said they use shotguns for fly swatters.
Yeah, but yeah, if we're trying to catch them on the wing, it's not fair to shoot when they land.
Yeah.
On the topic of mad science, I put a link into the super chat there for people to take a look at. There's an Australian scientist that's found evidence of massive plasma tubes floating above the Earth's atmosphere.
Cool.
I mean, that is something that is a real mind-boggler. Because, we were having a little chat the other day about mad science, and, you know, a lot of people are bringing some really good things to the table, and I'm not. So what I thought I'd do is trawl through the internet and find all the really weird, mad science stuff on the fringes of the mainstream and drop it in. The fact that we've massive, great, big plasma tubes floating above the Earth. I mean, what's above is the same below.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, and like I said, there's so much to this world that there's more to this world than meets the eye, and nothing surprises me anymore, but this little motor right here, Raymond, have you been listening in any?
No, I've just now got it here.
Have you seen my latest video that I put out with the hard drive motor?
No, I did.
Oh, you need to watch that, brother, because you're going to freak when you see this. I'll just tell you what, we're live on air anyway, so everybody watch the, you know, the happy talk.
There you go.
Alright, so, look, took a computer hard drive, I did a video called Just for Giggles, and I used the two computer hard drives that I mounted on a piece of wood, and basically used one to run the other. Running it off of just two of the four wires that's on the computer hard drive, I was able to get the other one to literally generate power. Of course, now in the first video, not very impressive power whatsoever, because it wasn't running fast enough off of the voltage that I was using off the AC 9-volt AC power supply. Matter of fact, the 9-volt power supply and the little motor were getting hot because of the way that it was running. There was too much resistance going on. But either way, it did show that you could actually take a computer hard drive and generate electricity with it. Alright, and so I took it a little bit farther and I hooked a Dremel up to it to use the Dremel to spin this thing up. Not only did it start cooling down, but it also started generating more electricity. I was able to, at some point, get over 60 and almost 90 volts, almost to 100 volts AC out of this little motor.
There you go.
So I put that video up, and then later on that afternoon, I did a few more tests on the doggone thing, and I came to the motor just in a different direction. I actually used the little buffing wheel off of my Dremel on the top of the motor to spin it, as opposed to off to the side where I actually got a little bit more traction. And I was able to generate at some points 360 volts AC coming up out of this little bitty motor.
Wow. Did you check your amperage?
No, I did not check the amperage. Like I said, I keep saying this, and I'm only interested in high voltage at this point. But this, I took this same motor, and I was able to light up an entire strand of LEDs that was set up to run off of 120 volts AC. I lit it up just as bright, and maybe slightly even brighter than the normal AC cord was. And so to see what kind of pull it would actually have, I actually connected an incandescent light bulb to it. And I'm not sure the voltage on this actual light bulb. It's one that came out of maybe a microwave oven or something to that effect. It was, at the very least, it was a 110-volt light bulb. And not sure what the wattage, probably maybe ranging around about 25 watts or even higher. And I was only able to light it up about a small percentage of what, but nevertheless, it did light up. So it told me that there was a lot more energy to that than I initially thought, because I was actually able to light up an incandescent with it.
Right.
So either way, if you've ever looked inside of one of these hard drive motors and you've seen that little micro-sized stator in there,
it's
mind-boggling that little tiny bit of wire, that little tiny bit of copper wire, that little tiny stator in there, and the ring magnet that surrounds it on the outer shell that actually is the motor portion of the, whenever you pulse these with the, basically Steve said that they can go anywhere from 5 volts and up, but when you pulse that, inside there, there's 3 or 4 little Hall effect sensors that would detect the north and south field that, you know, would pulse that motor with the circuitry that's on board in your hard drive. Either way, it's pretty doggone impressive that tiny bit of wire could literally carry that kind of voltage. If you understand what I'm trying to say here, because I don't believe that it's the copper wire that makes the difference. I believe that it's that magnetic field, that pulsing of that magnetic field. I believe it's the actual magnet itself that is what is literally generating that current, not in the conventional sense of how we use a brute force magnetic field to induce a current in copper wire. I believe there's something that quite more substantial going on here than meets the eye, because you can see it right there in video. I lit up an entire strand of LEDs just by raising the RPMs up on this thing.
That is super interesting, man. Really?
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
Hey, Sis, do you need any more hard drives?
Well, I've got a bunch of hard drives, but I never reject any of them.
Okay. I mean, mine are industrial hard drives.
Now, that's something I don't have.
Oh, they're big. I mean, the magnets in these damn things are over 2 inches long, an inch wide, and almost a quarter of an inch thick.
Oh, I'd love to see inside of one of those, then.
All right, I'll bring you, I'm planning on, with your permission, I'm planning on coming up there Thursday or Friday.
Cool.
And I'm going to stay for about 3 or 4, maybe 5 days. The reason I'm doing it that way is we turn our time in. All the guys turn their time in. Time stops Tuesday. They turn the time in Wednesday. And I use a payroll service. We put that on the computer and put it to the payroll company. And then UPS delivers my paychecks on Thursday. I sign them, and I have to sign them. The bank will not let me allow anybody else to sign my daily check.
Cool. You just put all that out on the air.
Right. The point I'm trying to make is I sign the checks, then I can leave.
Cool.
And Buddy says that it's about 500 miles from here to you. So I'm thinking a good 9-hour trip, maybe 10.
Yeah, take a lot of pictures on the way.
Yes, I will.
Anyway, yeah.
But anyway, what I want to do is get a list of stuff that I want to bring up to you. And I want to bring you some fluorescent light fixtures so that you can put them up in your shop and then build that little thing you were talking about to light them.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm going to bring you about 8 or 10 lights
fixtures, the fixtures and all. Those that you don't use, just take them apart and get the transformers out of them and use them.
Well, and then
I'm going to bring you about five or six industrial hard drives. And then the main reason I want to come is I want you to show me how to build that Slayer Exciter deal that lights up the fluorescent light bulbs for that wireless.
Yeah.
And then the second project, I'm going to bring a sonic humidifier. And the second project I want us to work on together is to open it up and reverse engineer it so that you can figure out how to build the electronic system to put out 8 to 10 times as much vapor. And I want to use that vapor as to run through my car engine, because I do know from personal experience that water injected into a car while it's running, a small amount will increase your horsepower 20 to 25% with no harm to the engine. I've done it before, but I want to do it with an atomized or molecular, reduce water down to its molecular level, but without turning it to a vapor.
We could try to set something up to where you could run like an old 5-horse Briggs and Stratton first to see how it works.
Well, I ran a V8 Ford. 1969 Ford, went back when Ford Rangers were a full-size pickup truck. And I'm going to tell you, all I used was one of my wife's empty perfume bottles.
Yeah.
I just the spray nozzle off, and so help me, it fit perfect. I just, just pulled the hose off my windshield washer where it sprayed on the windshield, stuck that in there, put some Digby Weld on it, drilled a hole in my breather cap, stuck it down there, put some window putty around it, and driving down the road, running about 40 miles an hour, I could shove the gas pedal to the floor and hit the windshield washer motor and pump water into that cover, and so helped me get with squall rubber for 100 yards.
It don't surprise me in the least, brother.
So what I want to do is make it. Here's the deal. It's not just the vape. It's hooking it to the your RPM meter to where as you accelerate, as the engine speeds up, it produces more vapor, and as you slow down, it produces less, because the humidifier I'm bringing you for us to take apart and reverse engineer has a rheostat on it, and you can set it where it just barely puts out vapor, or you could turn it up where, I mean, it just rolls out of that thing. But even so, at a molecular level, the amount that's there is only good enough for maybe a 4 or 5 horsepower motor.
Cool.
I hope we could do this, and it would really massively help your gas mileage, which in turn translates into money.
Well, I'm looking forward to your visit. If my calculations are correct, and I'm looking at this little motor that I'm holding in my hand that's been tore apart, little computer hard drive motor. If the frequency range is where I think it is, you would literally be able to, if these will connect to 5 volts AC, I already know they'll connect to 9 volts AC, but the way that I was running them actually was the wrong way, because I was only using 2 wires to run what was normally a 4-wire system with probably some Hall effect sensors inside there. But the energy that was coming out of there, I believe you could build a little mini generator that would run off of 9 volts AC that would do exactly what the Slayer Exciter's doing.
I thought the hard drives were 12 volt DC.
Well, Steve was saying that they're anywhere from 5 volts all the way up.
Hmm.
So,
depending on what size of the disc is, depending on whether you've got commercial or retail.
Yeah, but they are AC motors inside there. Now, whether the circuitry is DC...
there's one thing you have to be aware of with a hard drive is for it to actually read the platter. It's a sealed environment is pertinent. So the second you crack that open, there's a very good chance you're never going to get that to read any data off the disk again. So
agree with that, but I couldn't.
But the actual air environment inside it is to make sure that the actual readers themselves, they're like the small coils that read information from it, can fly at the right height so they can read the data.
Yeah.
On the 4 cable systems, two cables are for input of data, two cables for output of data, so you can read and write at the same time.
Cool.
The hard drives that I've got, the commercial, I've taken one out of the car, and there's three disks in it.
Okay. What size is it?
I'll tell you what, y'all go ahead and talk, and let me run to the shop and get one real quick. You know, take about a minute and a half.
Let's take a quick music break, so I got to go refresh my coffee real quick. What do you think?
That'll work.
All right, stay tuned, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science. Peace and love.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Can you read?
voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
All right, and we're back. So I got Steve on here and Raymond on here, and we're talking about these little hard drive motors, and we're talking about this, the... It's just pretty doggone amazing, man, whenever you look at the size of the inside of one of these little motors and to see the energy that is capable of being produced at high RPMs inside there. Now, I've seen, and Steve just read out, how many RPMs did you say that some of them motors start off at, Steve?
The original server started off at 1,200 RPM. And they can go up to 15,000 RPM, depending on what model and what aerial technology you've got.
Well, I literally believe that now that I've seen it with my own two eyes, that you could literally design a self-contained generator running at extreme high RPMs that would produce a massive amount of high voltage. Now, I've seen they call them smart drives or direct drive motors, stator motors, whatever, that are in the new washing machines. They have pretty much the same style stator as these right here. I've seen them hook them to 5-horse Briggs and Strattons and be able to pull off some huge arcs off of these things. So we know the power capability of just the motor by itself, without any modifications, is pretty impressive. Now, using what Gerard Morin was doing with the 50 kV transformer going down into the 25 kV transformer, and the way that he explains how he believes electricity to be radiation, like RF frequencies or whatever, it would tell me that you can dump that energy in so incredibly fast that you could literally change that energy over on demand to run all the inefficient junk that we're running right now. I mean, I know how it sounds because, you know, I've been taught about the same way everybody else is taught how electricity functions according to, you know, the standard version of what electricity is, you know, in the electrical world. Now, to tell an electrician that, you know, you could do this, they would look at you cross-eyed, obviously. I mean, it's blatantly obvious. But energy, no matter how you think about it, is traveling in waves. And the only difference between what's going on here, there's something way beyond that copper wire that is occurring. When you take that ring magnet and you raise the RPMs up on there and the voltage just continues to rise, if I could have brought that RPM up even twice as high as to what that Dremel was capable of going, it's hard to say how far that energy would have rose.
Well, yeah, how fast does your Dremel go? Most Dremels run about 6,000 RPMs. What did yours run?
It starts off at 5,000 and works its way up. Let me run in there real quick and take a quick peek. And you guys keep talking for a minute about those hard drives.
Yep.
Well, most of the hard drives that I've worked with work on a common 12-volt power rail.
Uh-huh.
So you get 12 volts, and it's the amount of amperage that you put through that 12 volts that increases the velocity of the capacity to spin the disc.
Okay, Steve, the hard drives that I've got, the industrial hard drives, they've got three discs in them. The discs are 3 1/4 inches in diameter, super shiny, but there's three and a room.
All right, sorry?
I'm back.
Face down.
Okay, there's it looks like almost like a Tesla turbine.
Yeah.
Now keep in mind that this isn't going to be it ain't going to reach the maximum because I was using a buffer brush to spin that motor.
Okay,
so you're not going to get the total RPMs unless you got a perfect couple between the motor and this Dremel. So
that's why I asked you to do this. I want to get to a point here.
Yeah.
Hold
on a second. It starts off at 5,000 and it has a maximum of 35,000 RPMs.
Ouch.
It's a Model 395 Dremel.
Okay. Now, if your buffer wheel, say, is 1 inch in diameter, okay, and the disc is 3 inches in diameter, then it's going to cut you down 3 to 1 if you take your buffer wheel on the outside of the disc. But if you put it on the side of the disc and slowly toward the center, it will speed up. You can actually make this thing run twice as fast as your Dremel.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was trying to work my way up to, is the fact that we have the capabilities of using gear ratios and pulley ratios in order to step up the RPMs on anything.
Right, well, take the whole thing. If you take your Dremel and put the buffing wheel at 90 degrees to the disc, and on the outside, it'll turn good slow, and then slowly move your buffing wheel toward the center. It'll speed up. And what you've got is a non-geared transmission. I mean, it's like a Dynaflow transmission.
Well, either way, what it says to me, as far as what I understand about mechanics and electricity, it says to me that those RPMs, the higher you can get those RPMs with that magnet spinning around those coils, the more energy is going to come up inside there. And
right.
I had the AC tester on there, plus I had the voltmeter on there, and if you watch the video real closely, you'll notice that your voltage jumps up in a high voltage range because I had it on the setting where it's up to 200 volts AC, and my meter is capable of reading it up to 700 volts AC, but the little AC tester, when it was on the load, would bring up to about 260 volts AC, and I actually seen it go all the way as high as 360 volts AC running it off the Dremel.
Shaziz, I put a link into the super chat into Awake and Shaziz Radio there of the Dremel 395 Type 5. It's probably not the same model as yours, but that goes from 5,000 to 30,000 RPM. So if people are wondering what you're talking about, just go in the chat and click the YouTube link and you'll get a description.
Yeah. Well, either way, check this out. Now, if you custom build one of these electric, I want to run a test, and I want to directly couple two of these hard drive motors together, because I was only using two of the wires off of the hard drive motor. The other two, it was essentially a motor generator at that point. When I put the AC in there and got to spinning, the other part was actually generating some voltage. Now, keep in mind, it wasn't a substantial amount of voltage, but also the RPMs weren't up where they should have been because I was running it with the wrong style voltage, which actually caused it to get hot.
Well, Shaziz, let me put you into a little secret about hard drives. They've specific software that's built into them that will control. Firmware that controls the hardware to make sure they don't spin too fast, because if they do, they can't read the data. So hard drives are capable of going significantly faster than they're used It just needs very sophisticated firmware on the actual controllers that regulate the amount of velocity that this would spin at, or else they can't read the information.
So, if there's a way to if there is a way to tap into that hard drive to literally control the speed of how fast that thing is turning, you know, up to its maximum potential, you could literally find the exact sweet spot in that to where it was generating the best electricity. Having two of these motors directly coupled would be an awesome and a very inexpensive test to literally show the concept works.
One of the ways that we've fixed hard drives before is they have a control board on them. The little circuit board is like green, usual green with copper on it. If your firmware controller is damaged, you can replace that and still use the hard drive, but you need to make sure it's the exact same firmware, which is kind of expensive and costly. But if you're having issues with that, trying to increase the RPM of the hard drive, take that control board off, get some blueprints of the hard drive, find out where the power is going in, and hook it up directly. Stick a little maybe pulse width modulator on it so you can control the amount of DC current, and I reckon that you might be able to turn that up and make it spin a lot faster.
Wait a minute. I'm sitting here looking at one I've taken apart. I have not pulled the motor out, but I've taken everything out except the motor and the discs. Now, here's nothing controlling it. So if you soldered some wire to the backside of the motor, didn't need a direct current, you'd have no control over the speed other than the amount of electricity you put into it.
Well, this is why I was saying put a little dial on it so you can tune it.
Yeah, very it.
You can put 18 volts in a 12 volt DC motor without hurting the motor at all, as long as you don't put it under a load.
Well, yeah. The question is, and there's no specific ones that you're talking about, are they stator motors inside there or a different style of motor? I can't wait to see what they look like. But
I don't even know.
With this little essentially, if you go and Google a direct drive or a smart drive or a stator on there for those washing machines, you'll see a full size version of what is inside of these computer hard drives. It is essentially a little star shaped stator inside there.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's an inch and a quarter in diameter, and it's way, way under a half inch thick. And yet it turns at 10,000 RPMs under control, like Steve said, under controlled conditions. But I've taken it completely apart to where I've got the wires that are exposed go directly to the motor itself. And there are four of them.
Well, from what I see right there, with the way that I've ran these things, and even after you take the Dremel off, you can still see that thing is a kicking around there, and it'll hum around and still put some juice out while it's winding itself down. But the bearings in these things are so doggone precise that they just fly.
Let me ask you a question here. The way this thing is designed, all right, the discs that are in it, it's designed exactly like a Tesla's turbine.
Well,
I'm pretty good and alter it in some way and use air pressure.
There.
But I do that at like 60 or 80 PSI, a Tesla turbine will turn up, hit 10, 15, 20,000 RPMs.
Well,
so if you got 200 PSI in here, how fast would that go?
That's what I was also trying to get to, that you could literally design using the Tesla turbine and these motors an air pressure system that would force air into that turbine and get that thing to screaming. I mean, the potentials are limitless. The capabilities of what these things could do, because you could watch this thing at a small amount of RPMs and start producing voltage all the way up to extremely high RPMs and producing a massive amount of voltage. So how far can you actually spin these things? And the key about the whole deal was, even after spinning that thing up and lighting those bulbs, this thing was not even so much as warm.
Well, Shaziz, the average platter in a hard drive, the discs themselves, are either aluminium, glass, or ceramic substrate. Now, if it's glass, you don't want it. But if what Raymond's talking about are commercial hard drives, they're probably either aluminium or ceramic. Now, if you've got a ceramic substrate covered with an aluminium foil, which is a magnetized surface, by the way, each one of those platters has regions, minuscule regions of magnetized areas, and that's where your bits of data come from.
Well, I think that if you built the Tesla turbine with those platters, that magnetism could actually be a plus as far as traction that you'd get on there, because when you're forcing atmosphere inside there, you see where I'm going here?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
I mean, I kind of finished working in IT around about 2008, and the rough size from my notes of the actual regions of magnetism were 200 to 250 nanometers wide.
Cool. All right, well, either way, what I'm seeing going on here with these little hard drive motors in the big direct drive or smart drive motors or stator motors, however you want to call them, and what I've seen from this little bitty gizmo right here tells me in my mechanical brain that it is 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt provable that you could build an electric generator that would not only put enough juice out to keep itself spinning, but put out a massive, and I mean a massive, amount of high voltage.
Well, the magnetic medium in a lot of these hard drives is usually based on a cobalt alloy. How about that, mate? that's going to be nice to play with, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So,
I mean, you're talking minuscule grains of it, but
In the right machine shop, with precision bearings and precision milling, it is, within 30 days' time, we could literally put out an energizer that would be a power source for anybody's house that I'm 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt. At the very least, you could run off of a 9-volt battery and run your entire house. Now, if that makes me sound crazy, I'm just going to have to sound crazy, because I see it in my head. I see it mechanically. I know it's possible.
Hmm. Well, you know, Suzanne, you said something earlier, and you've said it before on the same show, about the norm of learning the ins and outs of electricity. The thing is, you're going somewhere that's way out of the norm, and people are thinking you're crazy, but you're not, because the norm at one time was the world was flat. If you walked in a straight line long, far enough, you'd fall off the edge.
Yeah, but see, what I'm talking about right here isn't that science fiction. What I'm talking about here is being able to dump a extremely high amount of voltage into a containment storage unit that could be used on demand, and it's coming in so incredibly fast, and I believe the faster you can get them RPMs up, the better. But what we're not fighting with is Lenz's law, the effect, because we're not dragging directly off of the motor generator itself. All we're doing is using the generator to produce the high frequency that we need to cram that energy into that storage tank. See, Gerard Morin did it with he had a 50 kV transformer. He had a 2,500 watt generator. The video link is in ShazizRadio.com Super Chat HTML and over on the Wake Radio side. Go watch what he did with that 2,500 watt generator and see how much stuff that he was running. And the key to the whole deal is listen really closely when he turns those appliances on. You do not hear that motor, that generator, bogged down in the least.
What?
And he's saying that it's radio frequencies, it's radiation that is actually the prime mover of the electricity that is going on. He's basically just told the whole entire electrical community, you don't know what you're talking about.
You know what I was,
and I agree with him.
What I was trying to get at when I said what I did about you thinking out of the norm is that you don't just think out of the norm; you actually see it in your brain.
Yep.
So, and the thing is, it was what Christopher Columbus supposedly is the one that first figured out that without going anywhere, figured out the world was not flat, because he watched ships sailing out, and the ship would disappear, but you could still see the sails. And next thing you know, the sails would disappear, and you could still see the directional flag flying up on the top. So he knew it had to be going downhill.
So, Raymond, there is a theory out there that the reason why the Catholic Church in particular put out this idea of the flat earth, the Vatican, maybe not so much the Catholic, but certainly the Vatican put out the idea of the flat earth, is because if they travelled far enough, they would have bumped into the Celts. And the Celts have an 8,000-year-old history, whereas the Vatican is only 2,000 years old, and they didn't like it. Mm-hmm. Even the Romans built the roads in Europe across old Celtic wooden roads.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an advanced level of technology, which we're kind of piecing together as we go along. Well, there's a lot of theory, unless you actually go back there and have a look yourself in person. There's no truth to it, really. There's only theories. But the majority of our world is based on theoretical ideas.
Well, and that's exactly what's going on here as far as what I'm talking about. But I keep going back to Tesla and the knife switch. Tesla flipping that knife switch, and something was going on. He's flipped that knife switch over and over and over again to try to figure out why it is that every time he'd hit that knife switch that there'd be a sudden surge of energy behind that deal. Well, what I'm seeing going on with this circuit here, the Slayer Exciter circuit, and the doggone little motor running it at super high RPMs, is exactly what was going on with Tesla flipping that knife switch. When you change that magnetic field at such a rate, that it creates, in my mind, the Venturi effect that literally pulls energy into it. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
So,
I'll tell you what makes sense to me, Shaz, is my quote for the week.
What's your quote for the week?
Well, a guy called Albert Einstein was supposedly a genius, but there's one thing I do agree with him. He said that if you can't explain something simply, then you really don't understand it.
Yeah, well, I think simply put, is what I'm talking about is basically taking energy and moving it from point A to point B. See, it doesn't matter what frequency range you're in. All energy can be stored, you know? It's whenever you get to the point where you're actually going to use it on demand on the inefficient appliances that we got. Because right now, everything that we've got is set up to use a brute force magnetic field to get the energy to the point where it can run stuff. And it's running at 60 hertz, but your average digital alarm clock doesn't require 120 volts AC to run. It only takes 9 volts AC to run a digital alarm clock. But yet we use 120 volts AC to do it.
Wait a minute. I don't want to see
your power cut. I don't want to see these alarm clocks. These digital alarm clocks, you can put batteries in them.
Yeah, but the battery in them is only for storage. The battery is only for like the brain backup in there, and it will actually.
No.
Yeah,
it was before. You could run the radio. You could run the alarm.
I agree.
You could run everything on it.
But listen, what I'm saying, the 9 volt is a backup power supply. So not only can you run it off of 9 volts AC, but you can also run it off of 9 volts DC because of the circuitry inside there. But regardless, it doesn't take 120 volts AC to run that doggone thing.
All right, wait a minute. I don't want to change the subject at all, but I want to inject this. I told Steve earlier that these hard drives didn't have an voltage or amperage on them. They do. It says VDC, which is voltage DC, it has a plus 15, no, a plus 5 and a plus 12.
So it'll run off anything from 5 to 12.
Right, and it had the amperage at 5, it draws 1.8 amps. And at 12, it draws 1.1 amps.
So
there you go, the less amps you need.
Oh, no, it's 1.0, I'm sorry. At 5 volts, it draws 1.0 amps. And at 12 volts, it draws 1.1 amps.
Raymond, this is a true story. When I worked for Vodafone in Dublin in their billing department, running all of the mobile phone bills once a month, we had a server that used so much power that when we had to put an extra one in because of an increasing customer database and billing runs, we had to turn off one of the elevators in the building.
Okay.
Nowadays, when they've basically reduced the size of the nanometers in a processor, then the power consumption is significantly and drastically reduced, because they have to put less energy for a CPU to get the same amount of, say, processing hits out of it.
Right.
Just to put it as simply as possible. But nowadays, I mean, I bought a first generation of the quad-core i7 CPUs, and that drew 165 watts of power to run at full capacity.
All right, well,
you're looking at 65 watts.
While you guys are talking about how much amperage it draws, and there's actually a few people out there who talk about over Unity, who are saying that once you get past a certain RPMs, the amperage drops drastically.
Yes.
So what we're talking about right out of the gate is once you get this doggone gizmo started, the RPMs are such that you even if there was any lens effect going on, you would overcome that, because the RPMs would be so substantial that it wouldn't matter.
You're right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, you're exactly right.
So we have right now before us the capability to literally build generators, not in the conventional sense that everybody thinks of the standard generators, but in a sense that would bring up the voltage to such a rate that you could, I mean, just cram electrons into a storage tank to the point where if you didn't use that energy, it would begin to start arcing across to itself. So you would have more than you'd ever need in order to run this doggone thing.
Hmm.
And so, you know, take a look at the inside of the doggone hard drive motor. Seriously, take one apart and look how small that is. All right? And then study the magnet on there. All it is a ring-shaped ceramic magnet. It's a really cheap old magnet, kind of like the ones that you would actually use to stick on your refrigerator.
Well, actually, the ones I've got are neodymium magnets.
Well, yeah, but that's on the platter side of it.
Okay.
We're talking about in the actual motor, in the motor itself.
Okay, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a ring that goes around. That's your magnet inside there. And it's just like those sticky magnets that you make magnets for your refrigerator.
Right.
And so it's not even a powerful magnet, but yet you get that thing up to that RPMs, the voltage gets crazy. I mean, 360 volts AC is what I picked off of this thing right here just by spinning it with my Dremel. Alright? And the key about the whole deal was I was only measuring from two of the wires. I could put two voltmeters on the same unit and get the same amount of voltage out of both sides. So,
which is it?
360 times 2.
If a standard hard drive has four wires into it, two for sending information to be written to the hard drive and two for receiving information from the hard drive, then that means there's power going in two different directions.
Well, regardless of whatever, is that the fact that these things are really super impressive and there's something much more going on. I mean, we're not talking about a brute force magnetic field any longer. We're talking about a weak magnetic field that is, because of the RPMs on there and because of the super fast switching speed of that magnet flying from north to south in that ring around this coil, is literally creating an energy that is mind-boggling. I mean, come on, man. These things are tiny.
You're going to be impressed with these hard drives, these industrial hard drives. You're going to be really impressed.
I can't wait to see them.
Yeah.
Seriously. If you know, after seeing what this thing was capable of doing, after seeing what the smart drive motors that they use in washing machines, direct drive stator motors, whatever you want to call them, after seeing the arcs that was being pulled off of that just with a 5-horse Briggs & Stratton, I don't know what the RPMs is on a 5-horse Briggs & Stratton, but whenever he cranked that puppy up, he was pulling arcs at least 2-3 feet long off of that thing.
5-horse Stratton's capable of running at cruising speed would be about 3,500 RPMs.
Okay, imagine if you took that up to 35,000 RPMs.
Holy cow.
Dude, and this thing didn't even get hot when he did it. The motor, the stator didn't even get hot.
To this, you know why you have a spike protected power strip when you're running the computer?
To keep from surging?
Yeah, and what does surging do?
Basically, yeah, it's like Tesla hitting a knife switch. Too much energy rushes in at one time and overloads the circuit.
And you know what overloads on a hard drive if you get too much power?
What?
The controller board, which regulates the amount of power that's delivered to the hard drive to make sure it spins at an exact speed.
So, in all actuality, that motor is capable of much more speed than what it's actually regulated, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's an inhibitor.
So, if we unregulate it and use a variactor to control speed, we can literally find the sweet spot in that generator that would be the perfect frequency to run electrical appliances.
Oh, man.
Once you're running those platters, you want to be very careful to this, because if they shatter 10, 15, 20,000 RPM, they are very hard alloys or ceramics.
Oh, I believe it, but we don't even... I believe it, but we don't even need the platters, is what I'm saying. If you could take a step on these, set it on its side and look at it and see how it's set up, and you can build a horizontal shaft, you could put as many of these doggone stators on one shaft as you want, and as many rotors on or the hubs on as you want. You could have 10 of them on one solid horizontal shaft running off of one power supply. You could use the very first motor to be the power source to turn the RPMs on there. And if these things are capable of those types of RPMs just right out of the box, you could imagine what you could do, run the first one off of 12 volts and get those RPMs just screaming around there. And since you're not actually dragging a direct load off of it, it's never going to slow down.
All right, check this out, Shadiz. The shaft on this motor has three discs on it, and it has spacers between the discs. So if we take it out, take the disc off, put the spacers back on, but cut one up down smaller to where we put a pulley around it, okay? It is 1 inch in diameter. Now, we put a 10-inch diameter pulley on a motor and turn the 10-inch pulley at 3,000 RPM, that means it's going to turn this thing at 30,000 RPM.
I'd love to see what that thing does.
Bearing in mind to this that the reason why hard drives can spin at the RPM that they do is because they're incredibly well balanced. It's precision engineering.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about right there. If we get this in the right machine shop, we could literally build the best generator that mankind has ever seen.
But what Steve just said, it's plug and play.
Yep.
Plug and play. You can already buy the motor already.
Yeah, but see, I'm wanting to take and somehow or another modify it to where we can connect multiples of these to the same power source.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, if you could take these hard drive motors and be able to drill out the center of it to get one solid shaft to run all the hubs on there, and have like 10 of these in a row, running the first one off of as much power as you can get to run it without overheating that motor, and then measure the voltage off of each leg after that, I believe you're going to see some pretty amazing things.
Yep. Raymond, quick question. Your hard drives, they look like they've got a big plastic lever on the front of them.
Yes, sir.
That's what we used to call knuckle breakers. Because when you slot it into like a SCSI controller, you needed so much pressure to push down the clip. A lot of the sort of soft, girly nerds used to break their fingers doing it.
Dang.
There's a finger release deal on it.
Oh, yeah.
You close the lever down, it's got a little clip that's spring-loaded, and it clips in, and it holds it. But if you reach around and take that little clip and just push on it, and it just opens up real easy.
Cool.
Pushing it down is not all that easy when it's brand new, though.
Yeah, okay. When you're trying to shove it in a SCSI driver.
We used to call them pizza boxes for hard drives, because what it was like a flat box, and you'd have an array of 8 to 10, depending on what model you had. But, I mean, that was for Alpha Servers. I mean, I was building them for nearly 10 years, so I know exactly what you got there, Raymond. And it's old tech, but at the same point, it runs off copper cable, should it? They called it fiber, but it isn't fiber optics. It's actually a twisted pair of copper.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of fiber optics, while you're on that fiber optics service subject there, RimStar.org has done a deal where he's wirelessly transmitted using lasers, sound waves, to a receiver amplifier on the opposite side, which is the same thing that I keep talking about, how energy can be transmitted. We could transmit energy in the form of a light wave that... you could turn around and store and use just like any other electricity.
I'm going out to a shop for a minute. I'll be back in about 2 minutes.
You're using a higher different frequency, so it's not the standard electricity that you'd normally be accustomed to. But one of the things that Gerard showed in this doggone deal was, you know, when the linemen go out there and they mess around with these transformers, they got to be really super careful because those transformers will arc across that top wire and kill you. There's a lot of voltage going on through there. But he took an amp meter and put it over the top of that thing and nothing. I mean, there was no arc across there, but yet he's still running all that stuff off of that 20 kV transformer.
That's just insane.
Yeah, and so I'm saying he's right. I'm saying with his ideas and my ideas and what Tesla showed and a bunch of these other individuals out there, all the experiments that I've seen with the Slayer Exciter and the Tesla coils and plasma technology, I'm saying right now, at this present time, we have every single thing that we need to literally build the perfect generator that is self-sufficient. Renewable energy right there, straight out of the box, using things that are already ready on the shelves.
Can we just go back to what you were saying earlier, because I had a little thought then and I never got it out. Wasn't Tesla's point that you were talking about moving energy? I mean, they're using brute force magnetism to move energy from one place to another.
Yep.
But wasn't Tesla trying to tell us that we're not moving anything, we're just giving it the least half of resistance?
Yep.
Well, so all this time, effort, and energy that they're spending on trying to force stuff to do something is pointless, because if we give it a path to follow, it will.
He was lighting up tungsten element incandescent light bulbs using radio frequencies. Back in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, he was literally lighting up those light bulbs. Now, anybody who knows anything about tungsten element light bulbs knows that there's resistance inside that light bulb. It's inside a vacuum, and the reason why it's inside the vacuum is so that it don't get too hot and burn up because of the resistance. The friction creates heat. Heat is light, and light is heat, vice versa. But the fact that he was able to energize a incandescent light bulb using frequencies, you're not talking about a whole lot of current watts and amps to get this to occur. All you're doing is vibrating that tungsten element at such a rapid rate that it's literally creating the friction, which in turn is creating heat, which in turn is producing the light that's going on. So
I don't think I'd particularly like to be in a radiation field that's going to make tungsten vibrate, should this, because I've got 7 tungsten implants in my jawbone.
Well, I guess you're right on that particular point, but we're not necessarily talking about sending it wirelessly anyway. We're talking about, I mean, putting it into a device that is running it. You know, the only reason for the wiring in your house or the copper wiring in any of the appliances is that's just guiding the electricity from point A to point B. Whatever you believe electricity to be. Now, from what I've seen with this little experiment with this motor, there's something going on in this that has absolutely nothing to do with that electrical, that copper wire in there. There's something beyond that that has to do with the magnetism and the speed at which that magnetic field is fluctuating that's doing what it's doing. It's not your normal sense of brute force magnetic field to where the lines of flux are crossing the copper wire and shaking loose that electron as the standard model applies, the way it talks about. There's something much more going on here. And well, I mean,
it took me a while to get my head around it, but I finally seem to understand that there's nobody pushing electricity into your home. When you activate certain motors and various different equipment, it's pulling it.
Yeah, it's literally like the Venturi effect. Once you turn it on and then get the energy flowing, it pulls energy towards it.
It's like some guy with a dirty great big Hoover sucking up all the electrons.
Yeah. And so if you redesign how you initially get the energy, who cares how you change it, because you can change any form of energy. You know, the laws of physics says energy can neither be created nor destroyed. But you can change it around. You can change it up. You can change the frequency of it.
Sure, and taxes the... for that.
Yeah. So all you got to do is take any frequency range out there. You can store it. It doesn't matter what frequency. You know, we're using it at 60 hertz. Anything above that will literally destroy your motor, you know. That's because that's the best that they can do.
Didn't Tesla add certain comments about frequencies of electricity and its impact on human health?
Well, yeah,
he knew that
certain frequency ranges, they weren't good for you, but there were other frequency ranges that were almost like food. I mean, there's people that literally believe that with the right frequency around you, you wouldn't even have to eat, because your whole purpose for eating to begin with is to build up the calories to generate the energy that you need for your body to survive and heal itself. And so, you know, guys like, I can't even remember.
Will Rice?
Yeah, there you go. He was using frequencies to basically cure cancers, what he said. All right, well, regardless of what's what on that. I mean, it's obvious that you can take a specific frequency and you can shatter a crystal glass. If you match the resonance of that crystal glass and then one step above it, it tears it apart. And so if that's the case, then you could do the same thing with any object out there, because everything out there would be have its own specific resonance and its own specific frequency. So there would be healing frequencies out there just as well as there would be killing frequencies out there.
Yeah, but aren't they always looking to destroy instead of create?
Yeah, well...
That's one of the things that depresses me about the society we live in, is everything is about fear, and there's very little about love.
Well, I'm you know where I stand on that portion. I'm just saying...
I'm preaching to the choir, mate, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm just saying that right now, I think we're literally sitting on a gold mine of information that if we take and run with it right now, that we could literally get the whole energy crisis thing solved overnight. I mean, as far as building an actual physical device, it would take being in the right machine shop with some talented individuals who could literally make a precision piece of machinery. I mean, because like you said, the hard drive motors are perfectly balanced, they're precision, and that's why they're able to spin up as well as they do without literally coming apart at the seams. But seeing what I saw from this little bitty gizmo right here, I'm more than convinced that we could literally build a generator that would self-sustain. That would literally, once you started this thing, it would produce enough energy to keep it running, which goes totally against everything that says you can never get out more than you put in. You know, that you'd have losses. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, that's just kind of justifying the whole infrastructure that we've got, where we're beholden to a middleman, as G2 was saying earlier.
Well, I don't want to be beholden to a middleman. I don't want to be beholden to the power company. I want to basically build a system that basically shuts them down, man.
How dare you?
Sam Usher this. Do you realise how many millions of people that you will put out of pointless jobs which they don't like and they really don't want to be involved in?
Well, you know what?
Think about what would happen if everybody tomorrow could generate their own electricity, to provide their own water through the amount of electricity they could generate by pulling it out of the atmosphere, which is pretty much possible in most areas of the planet. There's a few where there just isn't the humidity to support it, but there's always other technologies that you can solve.
Well, there's tons of ways to pull energy. We're floating in a sea of energy. I mean, literally, there is energy everywhere.
I mean, I put a link in there, Shaziz, about the, what was it? The US Navy turned into hydrogen motors to power their ships.
Yeah.
Because they're on the ocean. There's no lack of supply of hydrogen and oxygen from the U.S.
Steve, you've got a great point there that if everybody tomorrow morning generated their own electricity, blah, 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 that is a good point to bring up, except for one thing. You're talking about magic, and it couldn't happen. Magic does not exist. Science exists. Science says...
Unless you got this, mate,
all these apparatuses for these people, which means you're going to be creating jobs to replace the jobs that you're destroying.
Yeah, well, the point being is, why do we need the jobs in the first place? This is what I come down to is, yeah, there are people that have valid contributions to the world, but there's a lot of people at this very moment in lots of places in the world that are sitting in call centres, ringing people up, offering them awesome discounts on their current mobile phone bill.
Right.
And I don't think they particularly want to do that job if they're the choice, and I'm sure the people that they're calling really don't want to be interrupted in the middle of their dinner either.
Well, listen, guys.
So, why do we have all of this stuff? It's a control mechanism. And freedom to produce what you need to just cover basic survival. Shelter, food, water, heat, cold, whatever.
I agree. Exactly what I'm talking about right here is, even if you weren't able to get this to be completely self-sustained, if you can visualize a wind turbine that was electrically assisted, that even when the wind wasn't blowing, it was still turning. So when the wind comes to hit that thing, it's already turning. So it doesn't take as much wind to get it turning even faster. The stronger that wind is, you will finally get to a point where it will overcome what the electric motor is doing and spin it yet even faster and get to the point where the amount of energy that you're using to run the electric motor will become less and less the higher that wind gets.
Well,
and so
this is, look at the high-end Mercedes engine, where if you stop at the traffic lights, the engine shuts down. But what it has is a dirty great big flywheel in it that keeps spinning even when the engine isn't turning.
Yeah.
So when you do want to move again, it kicks it straight in.
So that's pretty much the same thing. Pretty much the same thing. But what I'm saying is, you would get to the point where this thing would become so efficient as far as just the driver force, the initial electric portion of that wind generator. And then after the wind started picking up, it would get yet even more efficient and still be generating electricity at that point. It wouldn't take near the energy that it would to run it off the battery, as you would think, because the faster that thing got to spinning, the more energy it would be producing and shoving energy back into the same power supply that you were initially using to run the source. You see where I'm coming from here?
I've had a few conversations with Muddy about, overpowering windmills. And it comes down to physics at the end of the day. If your propeller's spinning too fast, then you've got to have something that's going to hold it in place. Because I've seen some of his videos where he stood on a beach in a strong wind holding on to one of his windmills.
Yeah, but see, if this thing's made right and it's balanced, you can run it up to extreme RPMs without having to worry about it shattering. You know, if it's built right from the start to finish, and you got it to where, just the least amount of voltage will keep that motor turning. And then once the wind kicks up, the wind doesn't have to work near as hard to spin it up even faster. Then you're getting to the point where that thing is so super efficient that it's just mind-boggling. And now that we've seen what this thing can actually do at high RPMs, the high RPMs at some point with the standard deal would be devastating, because that energy being shoved down into the place where you're going to be using that energy is too high for the circuitry that is supposed to be regulating it. And so that's why he's got to get the RPMs right on there so that the frequency range is right for what he's using it for.
The only problem is if you've got an exceptionally fast-spinning turbine blade producing energy on a windmill, you're going to have some crusty, smelly fella with long hair and a Yeti hat on that he bought on his trip to the Himalayas camping out complaining about damage to bats. So, in fairness, if you are going to have something that revolves at high proficiency, you do need some sort of shielding or guarding around it.
Well, yeah, and that's just one of the things, that, you know, because you can't please everyone. So, like I said, if you got an open blade, put a cage around it, and the birds can't get in there, and there ain't no stress over it. But you could even hide these things, man. Inside of hills, you could put a big giant wind turbine that would allow that air just to flow right through the other side of the hill and not affect anything. All right.
Well, this is why I was kind of interested in the Vorx, the vertical wind turbine. Instead of having a propeller blade, what you've got is a cylindrical shape with curved blades on it that spins on like a vertical axis instead of a horizontal. Well, there's a really interesting experiment been done with that.
They're called Savonius, and I've got a video on YouTube showing what I built out of 55-gallon barrels.
I saw that one. That's exactly what I'm talking about, Raymond.
And I'll tell you what, 9 feet high, and so help me, I've got a video showing it. The leaves on the trees, you had to look really hard to even...
Well, that's some super efficiency going on there.
But the great thing with a vertical wind turbine is you can also run it horizontally as well.
0.0, and so help me, it was reading decimal 0.0. So the wind was blowing, but blowing less than 1/10 of a mile an hour, and this thing was turning at about 15-20 RPMs. Now, it wasn't producing electricity, but it's like what Shin says was saying about building it so super balanced that it in itself does not rob any of the energy to keep it going.
That's what I'm saying. According to my calculations, If I'm correct in what I'm saying, is that you could literally generate enough energy, you wouldn't even need a turbine. I mean, just to get this thing started with the electromotive force, such as running it off of a battery, the RPM's getting up there so incredibly high that you're pumping out some extremely high voltage that basically is well beyond what it takes to run the thing. Some of that is diverted off into a storage tank, which is then in turn bled back into the battery. You could get this thing to literally run itself.
All right, see this. Your idea about using high voltage, and I saw a video the other day, guys building, I think it's Tesla Man Show. Anyway, he's building a big reimbursed static electricity machine.
Yeah, I saw that Mr. Tesloni, and he's got that, his 4-foot in diameter Wimshurst.
The speed is just as important for static electricity. Why couldn't we turn this and put something that would just barely touch it and have it make static electricity?
You could make this a combination. You could make a combination Wimshurst / direct drive style motor. I mean,
yes.
the implications are limitless. The possibilities are limitless on what we're talking about here.
I'm thinking that 20,000 volts would be a peanuts to this thing if you use it as a static electricity charger.
Yep, and the Venturi effect is not something to be overlooked, because you've seen that you can actually pump water using air pressure. You can shoot air pressure through a wide pipe, and it will literally create a vacuum on the opposite side. Well, anything, it works the same way with electricity. It literally draws energy in with it.
Yep, she says they were using gravity pumps in Ireland to drain fields.
See?
There you go.
So it's not how...
It takes a while, but it gets there eventually.
It's not how you move the energy. I mean, all we're doing... literally, it's moving energy from point A to point B. We haven't destroyed anything, we haven't changed anything, we haven't created anything. All we're doing is moving it from point A to point B. And it's how you move it, how rapidly that magnetic field's fluctuating, which will determine how high that voltage rises.
Yep.
And knowing how easy it is to literally create high voltage and then turning that into plasma, we already have the technology to rectify the plasma back into DC. So you could have a miniature reactor sitting right there on the side where one of it's wired off to using for AC current and the other is rectified DC current running back in to charge your system back up. It's too simple. As far as I'm concerned, it's too simple.
Well, they're just there. I've put in a gravity fed pump setup and I've dropped it in the tube at Super Chat for people to have a look at. It's kind of simple stuff, really.
Yeah. So, you know,
when I
sit there and I talk about how energy's free, electricity's free, I mean it. I mean, it's there. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. Now, we're basically trying to, there's all kinds of different people out there trying to literally modify existing systems such as the inefficient electric motors by, you know, like maybe taking a three-phase and making a motor generator out of a three-phase. And so they're fighting with the standard form of energy. Why fight with a standard form of energy when you can create an entirely new energy source to tap into that would make all the difference in the world as far as electricity goes?
Okay, I've got a question on this.
Well, before that, Raymond, I have to say that Shiz is, we're going to fight on this until the day when we're both old and grey and got no teeth. The energy itself doesn't cost you anything but the materials that you require to harness it and use it in a manner that's specific to your requirements is not.
I agree. Now, see, here's there's a split in hairs portion of it. See,
it's
like the solar panels.
Is, mate, because you can't trot out
to go out.
Say, oh, I'll take that. Thank you very much. I want to build an energy generator.
To go out and buy all the solar panels to run your entire house is a very expensive endeavor. But once you got the solar panels in place and you own them completely, whatever energy's coming in there is putting money back towards what you paid for the thing. And at some point, maybe 10, 20 years down the line, it done more than paid for itself, and now it's paying you back because you're not paying
electric
bill.
If you can go out into your yard or into your, you got about 12, 13 acres, haven't you?
12.
Yeah, if you can walk out into that 12 acres and collect the materials that you need to be able to generate, harness, and deliver electricity in the manner that you feel is suitable, then I will agree that energy is free. But somebody somewhere has to make it. And we live in a structural society where people expect to be paid for that because they have bills to pay.
Yeah, but once again, it's splitting hairs, man.
Splitting hairs. The fact that somebody has to produce something for you to convert.
I understand what you're saying there. Oh, that drives me nuts. Look.
So,
Tesla was going to build one specific unit that would power, send the energy wirelessly across to whoever had an antenna. And so, at that point, J.P. Morgan got kind of ticked up because, hey, if we can't meter it, then I don't want to pay for it because I want to make money off of it. So, had he'd have been built that way back then we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Exactly my point. There is no such thing as free energy because Tesla needed J.P. Morgan's money to build it.
Right.
Well, I gotta respectfully agree to disagree because we're floating in a sea of energy. Just because we don't have the tools and the antenna, the receivers on hand to build it doesn't mean that it ain't there because it's there. The wind's blowing. I ain't got charged for it yet. The sun's shining. I ain't got charged for it yet. The river's still flowing. Huh?
You do get you get charged by the government per kilowatt that you collect on your own solar panels.
Really?
Oh, yeah. 25 cents per kilowatt. And for every kilowatt that you produce on solar panels on your own land, you have to pay the Spanish government a fee for it.
Oh, the Spanish government, okay.
Well, I don't have to pay the Spanish government.
You're right. We are floating in a sea of energy, but the tools are not free.
I never said the tools were free. I said electricity's free, and it is. Hey, when's the last time you got charged for a lightning bolt?
Really?
You know how much, you know how much voltage is in there?
Don't put ideas into the registers. It's election year. Let's have a lightning arrest attack because you're digging up the earth and ruining the environment to provide the aluminium or copper or whatever you're using as a lightning rod.
We're just never going to get around this whole paying thing, are we?
No.
Look, I don't care whether or not, I'm just going to, look, I'm going to prove it 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt that electricity is free, regardless of what it costs to get the tools to make it. Once you got it, it's yours.
Yeah.
And that is the inhibitor in mad science. It's not the energy that's costing us the money. It's the tools and materials that we need to collect.
Yeah, the machine shop fees, you know. You get it into a machine shop, you could build a generating system that people could duplicate. You know, once it was up and running, then you're not paying the man anymore. And I don't care if somebody else gets paid. I just don't want the man to get paid. Because he's a crook.
Well, I'll tell you what, Shaziz, I'll give you a link to my website, but you must hurry because greedy energy corporations are trying to shut this down. So go immediately for only $69.99. I can send you some plans that won't work.
Well, I'm going to tell you this right now, that whenever I get when I get something substantial, it's going out to the public for free. No energy plans, no website that says that you got to pay me for the plans. You just take the plans and you build it and you show your neighbor how to build it and so on down the line. Because when I say free energy, I'm not trying to get rich. You know, all I'm trying to do is keep my word to the power company. Because when the power company did me the way that they did me and treated my family with the disrespect and the way that they talked to me and degraded me whenever I was in need of their assistance as far as electricity goes, which they got me in that jam to begin with because it was underneath the guise of the doggone... what the heck they call that? What's going on back there?
My wife just came in and talked to me and I forgot to mute my mic.
Oh. Anyway, there's this this payment plan that you can get on that basically you'll have the same amount of electric bill every single month. You no surprises. It's they'll take and estimate your account to your highest bill and basically send you the same amount of bill. And after a while, you're supposed to build up a surplus of money, and at some point, you don't owe no money on one of the months. So it's like a savings account, you know, and you never have to worry about...
So basically, a couple of million people that have had their lives destroyed and now in positions of financial insecurity give electricity companies free loans.
Yeah.
And then once in a blue moon, they'll give them a bit back.
And then,
like the mafia,
if you
come in to collect your money every week and then give you a turkey at Christmas.
Yeah, and then if something happens, like a car breaks down and you get behind on your bill, if you miss the shut-off day by one single day, they will literally shut your electricity off. And then when you call them up to find out what it would take to get your electricity back on, their answer is you have to pay your entire bill up current. Well, by that time, you have developed an account that is up in the $1,000 to $2,000 range. Your average Joe don't have that kind of money to be handing over. Plus, they wanted a substantial deposit, which was a $700 deposit just to turn you back on. And so,
Shaviz, just out of interest, I rang my electricity company when I was living in the Republic of Ireland and just asked them a simple question. I said, look guys, I've been trawling the internet and I've been working with some friends of mine around the world and we've developed an independent energy system. So I just wanted to know when you're going to come and collect your meter or whether you're prepared to pay me to store it for you because you keep claiming it's your property and you don't want me to remove it. So when are you coming to get it because I don't need it anymore? And the woman would say, what? I said, I can power my own home from my own electricity source. And she said, oh, but you have to pay us to disconnect you. I said, but why would I pay you to provide me with a service that I no longer need? In fact, you should be paying me for storing your equipment.
Yeah, and that's the thing, man. They got so, all kinds of built-in rules right there on your doggone electric. You can't even shut that thing off to do any repairs or anything without having them come out there and cut that little tag off. If you have them cut that little tag off, they'll fine you $500 for cutting that little tag off to redo your wires inside there.
Well, no, in fairness, where we were, as long as you had a qualified electrician and you notified them that work was going on, that would be okay.
Yeah, well, in this particular incident, they have to physically come out there, which they charge you for, and then they can let the electrician do the work on it. But regardless, on that level payment plan, when we got behind...
Level of what end?
Listen, when we got to the point where we got to jam and we missed the doggone shutoff notice by one day... They shut us off, and they're telling me it's going to cost me like $2,200 to get it turned back on. Meanwhile, I got kids to keep cool and refrigerators and food in the refrigerator that I needed to keep going. So for 2 months or so, 2 or 3 months, I'm running electric generators out there, gas generators that weren't very good generators at the time, at $4 a gallon of gas, trying to keep these generators going long enough to basically keep the food good and everybody warm or cool, whatever the case may be. And I kept calling them up on a daily basis saying, look, I'm spending $100 a week on gas that I could be giving you towards this doggone electric bill. Is there any way you can possibly work with me? And they're like, no, you got to pay the entire bill up current. We're not turning you on. They had absolutely no mercy, no kind of safety net whatsoever for people that fell behind. And so, finally, after being able to get some assistance, we were able to get our doggone electricity back on. And I wrote the head of the power company. I told him, look, I said, because of the way you treated me and my family during our time of need, had absolutely no safety net, and your employees were rude and disrespectful to me over this deal, I said, I'm going to dedicate the rest of my entire life to studying everything there is to know about alternative energy. And when I get that accomplished, I'm going to share it with every single one of your customers for free. That's the promise that I made. That's why I'm here today. And I will do it. Mark my words.
You're just a belligerent FOB. I mean, you actually have justification for it, and in certain respects, so do I. Because I'm sick and tired of supporting an infrastructure that is there's no other reason for it to be there than to limit our capacity to have a quality of life. It's not there to enhance it. And this is the Hegelian dialect that they constantly throw against us. War is peace.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, man. There are countries out there that here we are in 2015, and we have the technology to keep people cool or to keep people warm, to be able to pump fresh water and filter fresh water to them. And you got people out there in this world that are suffering that can't get fresh water, that can't be cool, that can't. Why should anybody on this world be able to be comfortable when somebody else on this world can't? You know. There's societies out there, little towns and villages all over this world that could use some fresh water, that could use the benefits that everybody else has the luxury of enjoying, and the technology's there. Why aren't this whole United Nations thing, who's supposedly be out there for the better of everybody, why aren't they shipping generators and filtration systems and food to needy parts of the deal? Instead, they'd rather go over and bomb the crud out of somebody and force them into compliance, as opposed to, instead of using that energy to go around and create harm to people, using that energy to go over there and make this world a better place. So
war is peace, you see. How can you have peace if you don't have war?
Well, by all definitions, the United Nations is worthless as far as I'm concerned. And anybody who would support the United Nations is worthless as far as I'm concerned. Because the doggone United Nations hasn't done nothing to solve anything in the entire time of its existence. Is there still poverty in this world? Yeah. Why? Is there still people hungry in this world? Yeah. Why? Is there still war going on? Yeah. Why?
Well, when they talked about water privatization in the Republic of Ireland, which it wasn't supposed to be privatization, it was supposed to be a government agency,
and it seems to be very private right now. a friend of mine up in the country, real farmer boy, they call him a colchie. That's kind of an Irish slang word for somebody that wears rubber boots and likes to keep sheep and cattle and stuff like that. But he said to me, well, the government are telling me that I should be paying between 500 to 1500 euro a year for a water supply that I'm already taxed for in VAT and other taxes that I'm paying, whereas the Red Cross can do an entire African village for $3 a month.
Well, and then therein lies another thing. Why should anybody have to be paying for water anyway? You know?
Well, it's a fundamental human right, Shaziz, and if you want to control people, the best way to do it is to attack them at the very basic levels of survivability.
And I think that that's why, as far as the technology that we've got, energy is probably the most important one to solve, because if they're out there having wars over oil and coal and resources such as that to generate the electricity for everybody to live in luxury, then what happens the day that people find out that they can literally generate their own power, and instead of paying anywhere from $3 to $1,000 a month for energy usage, that they can save that money to help benefit themselves and families and their neighbors, instead of giving it away to somebody who's just getting rich off of them?
Well, Shaziz, if Davy from the Navy can create 50,000 gallons of fresh water on an aircraft carrier per day, why is that technology not being put into mainstream?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. Why is it here we are in the year 2015 and our infrastructure, according to their own mainstream media, is junk? It's going to fall apart. God forbid we ever get a CME from the sun that gives us a direct impact like back in the 1850s or 1890s, somewhere around about, where they had overload power lines that gave the telegraph operators one heck of a shock and started fires.
You know, yeah, but that's just a conspiracy theory. That wouldn't happen.
It's almost unbelievable how easy it is to desalinize ocean water and make it drinkable. How easy and how cheap it is to build a machine to do it. It's unbelievably simple. I just wish somebody that really wanted to do it would talk to me about it, because it's so easy, it is pathetic.
Well, why?
I'd like to do that.
Why is there children drinking dirty water these days?
Really? Well, because corporations like to pollute rivers. Check this out, okay? You run a pipe up in the air 35 feet. You run it over and run it behind a sun-blocking screen, so it's one side of it, and run it back down 35 feet. It's sunny on one side, shady on the other. You pull a vacuum on it. A vacuum will only pull water 32 feet. That's it. After that, there's nothing left but water vapor. So the water vapor on the cool side cools and condenses back to water. On the sunny side, it gets warm and turns into steam under low pressure.
Yeah.
Now, you do this on a barge, pipes side by side, a barge 150 feet long, pipes an inch in diameter, that's 1,200 pieces of pipe making water on one barge. I mean, come on, and how much is PVC pipe?
Not very much.
35 plus 2 feet to cross over, you're talking 72 feet of pipe. Times 1,200. Once it's built, you sit there and work for years. Well, not really, because PVC does have a tendency to get hard and brittle in the sunlight. But it's so cheap. After about 4 or 5 years, you build another.
Yeah, but regardless, the solution's all there.
Protected.
Regardless, the solutions are already there. We've got all the technology to ensure that everyone on this planet could literally live in comfort. And
yes.
If it wasn't for greedy corporations and stupid policies that the doggone governments try to force upon everybody, we could literally live in perfect harmony with nature and still be as comfortable as we are now, if not even more comfortable than we are now.
Right.
And when I talk about we, I'm talking about we as humanity, all of humanity, everybody in the third world country. They got fresh water, they got air conditioning when they need it, they got heat when they need it, and food and everything, and irrigation. I mean, how easy is it to dig a ditch? You got tons and tons of military equipment being moved all over the planet all day long, every day, which is using tons of fossil fuel. What kind of carbon footprint's that laying down? So instead of moving military equipment around, why don't you move some bulldozers and some backhoes around and dig some trenches so that you can irrigate these people's farms so that they can have some food?
Right. Well, Shazir, it's one of the mad science links that I put in that somebody sent me, a friend of mine, was, let me just scroll back up to the start of the show. It was wimp.com, farm-located. That's the link. And basically, this family is producing £6,000 worth of food a year in their back garden.
See?
And you know what? You can stick a TV outside, and you can watch the wrestling whilst you're planting your veggies.
Yep. And if you get tired, of using the doggone TV, take the tube out of it, put a glass in the front, and make a solar dehydrator, and dry your food for storage.
You know, I lived in North Carolina. I took a plot of land 36 feet by 36 feet, and I combined American organic gardening along with French intensive gardening to that one spot, combining the two. And so help me, in one growing season, I grew 800 bushels of tomatoes in that one little spot.
And how many people benefited off of that?
I mean, all I did was dig a spot out 2 feet deep.
How many people benefited off of that?
Oh, a lot.
See? And that's what I'm talking about. And that's the kind of community that my father-in-law lives in. I mean, he's a farmer. He grows all kinds of more than what he needs. And whenever his neighbors are in need, they swap out. And the neighbors will bring him maybe some corn. And they'll give him some tomatoes and some watermelon and stuff like that. And so that community, if you go hungry in that community, it's because you just chose not to eat. Now,
that's what we did. We did not sell the tomatoes. We bartered. We traded.
Yep.
People that had hay fields, I got hay for my horses and gave them bushels of tomatoes. People that grew sweet corn. Oh, God, my family loves sweet corn. Phew.
And that model for that type of community would work universally in any other community. If you gave these folks the opportunity to be able to grow and share their own food, then they would be just fine.
They grow a lot of sweet corn, but they don't have a green thumb for tomatoes. Then there's people out there that have a green thumb for tomatoes, but they don't have a big piece of land. Grow what you know how to grow, what you are good at growing. Use your green thumb. Grow more than you need, and then use your excess to trade it for things that you don't grow.
Raymond, if you tell me you can have a garden, but you've got a porch, you can grow tomatoes in an upside-down bucket.
Oh, yeah.
But as you were saying about, there's a YouTube video that I mentioned when I was doing my own thing on TNS about a group that were growing 1 million pounds in weight of food on 3 acres. And yep. It was nearly 10,000 fish, and I think the other was about 500,000 pounded vegetables. But right. It's nice to see that they've got one that's published on the 23rd of July 2015. I don't know if it's the same original video, but again, 1 million pounds of food on 3 acres using a variety of different methods, but mostly aquaponics.
You know, the garden that I planted, it was three. It was American organic gardening, American lazy man's garden, and French intensive gardening. And I combined all two methods, and that's why I got such a high yield. The lazy man's garden has no weeds, you need no cultivation, nothing, and you cover the entire thing with a straw mat. I mean, yeah. You're going to have to buy it or make it. You just put it out there, it'll mat down. And the weeds will not grow through it, but water and rain will go through it. And the thing is, we went 6 weeks with no rain. And I went out there, and the mat was at least 4 or 5 inches thick. It's so tight that I had to take a butcher knife and cut a slot in it so I could raise it up, stick my hand under it to see if I needed to water my garden. The ground was just as moist and cool as could be, and it was 102 degrees that day, and the ground was cool.
So, listening to everything that you've been saying and everything we've been talking about on this show, there is absolutely no reason whatsoever for anyone on this planet to do without anything. We got hydroponic technology, aquaponic technology, technologies for all kinds of energy generation. There's more energy around this planet than would ever be able to be used in all of our lifetimes. And so for anybody out here to be doing without is just flat out ludicrous.
All right, the only reason that people stake tomato plants is because if the tomato touches the dirt, it rots. With the lazy man's garden, you put the straw mat down, you don't need to stake the tomatoes. Plus, a tomato vine, anywhere it touches organic material, it will grow roots. So as it spreads out, it grows roots and grows through the mat into the dirt. So your plants are stronger, healthier, and your tomatoes do not rot because they do not touch the dirt. They're sitting on a straw mat. It's unbelievable how many tomatoes you can grow in one small little teeny spot if you do it right.
Here's a mad one for you, Raymond.
Yeah.
Did you know that strawberries grow like a vine?
Yes.
If you take the strawberry and you take that stem and you keep it above ground, and when it starts showing shoots, you put that into the ground, you will grow another strawberry plant.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So if you've got containers...
Yes, garden, you work just like the tomato plants. They'd be stronger and healthier because they grow roots down through the mat. And they would grow much better strawberries. And the thing is, the mat keeps the ground from drying out in the sun.
When I was 12 years old, Raymond, one of my jobs when I used to go to the local farm to earn pocket money was to spread straw around strawberry plants.
Right.
That's why they call them strawberries.
Oh, really? Oh, man, that is cool, Steve. That is cool. I often wondered where they got that name. That is wow.
All right, guys.
Seriously.
What we're talking about here, look, it's already... Everybody's always talking about how you need solutions, right? We got the solutions. Now what are we going to do with it, all right? My suggestion is what I'm going to do with it is I'm going to bring this this idea to the table of somebody who I know that already owns a plasma cutter and a machine shop, and I'm going to get them interested in basically building an alternative energy generator. And prove exactly what it is that I'm saying. All right,
well, I've got a metal lathe and a plasma cutter.
All right, well, there's a start. Now we get everybody, all the brilliant minds together, and we take every single bit of information that we've got at hand, all of our knowledge that we've researched, all this deal, and we just flat out do what we're talking about. I mean, just build it. It's as simple as that. We've got the technology. There's off-the-shelf things that can be modified directly to build this generator that would take a little bit of machining in order to make sure that it remains balanced and so on and so forth. But we have what we need right now to literally build and prove free energy once and for all.
Well, Shaziz, I've always maintained if you can give me an off-grid energy supply that can provide in excess of 60 watts, then I can show you how to germinate enough seedlings to feed yourself all year round.
Well, brother,
because in a lot of places in the world, you can't germinate the seeds.
I believe
the flowering period.
I believe that with that little hard drive motor, the same method by which I used that hard drive motor, slight modifications, that hard drive motor puts out more than enough energy to run that light bulb that you're talking about.
Should this, when I come to Missouri, I'm going to sit down with a cup of coffee in your shop, and we're going to talk, and I'm going to show you, draw pictures and everything, show you exactly how you can air condition your entire house off of one 250-watt solar panel.
Well, that's all great, but I'm going to produce enough energy to where I can run this cruddy old inefficient heating unit and cooling unit that's on the side of my house and prove it can be done for less than that.
Hey, 250 watts of free energy, and you don't have to touch it. Once it, once it's running, you don't have to do a daggone thing.
Well, I'm open for anything. Anything that takes the penny out of the pocket of the electric company, I'm in.
Just to put that into perspective, Raymond, the probe that they sent out to Pluto runs on 200 watts.
Really?
That's the entire power supply that it has, 200 watts.
I just
don't. To send images back.
The only way they can do that is that there are hours and hours and hours of time that nothing's being used on this probe, and that's all that energy is being stored.
Well,
I think they're using a plutonium generator, actually. I'll better look that up.
Yeah, regardless of how they do it or how long they use it, it's just proof of what I've been saying all along. They're able to take a chunk of plutonium and build a thermoelectric generator. They could do the same thing here with all the radioactive waste that's all over this planet.
Exactly.
They could bury it right in the uranium mine itself. I mean, as long as that uranium's depleting, it's releasing energy. And it doesn't matter the frequency of that energy. That energy can be moved and stored. All we're doing with any form of energy, whether it be wind power or water power or solar power, is we're just guiding the energy to where we want it to get physical work done. That's it.
Right. You've already said it four times. We already have. We have had all the knowledge we need and technology that we need to do exactly what we've been talking about for the past year and a half. It's there. We're just not using it.
Well, for me, it all boiled down to this. In order to be able to prove free energy, people want to see a physical device that will actually prove it. All right? The theories are already there. The theories are already proven. As far as I'm concerned, free electricity has been more than proven. So now it's a case of putting it in an actual physical device that people can literally see for themselves that these so-called laws in physics aren't necessarily cracked up what they're cracked up to be. So with the technology off the shelf that we've already got access to, see, they made a mistake and they showed a crazy mad-haired science guy named Shaziz a hard drive motor and allowed him to take it apart inside. And now that I see what this thing can do at super fast RPMs, I'm sold. There's no doubt in my mind. I've seen what the smart drive motors can do, the direct drive motors or stator motors that we're talking about. I've seen the arcs that can pull off of there. I know how to take any frequency range of energy and literally put it into a storable containment unit, which then in turn can be used on the inefficient appliances we've got now.
Yeah,
it's solved. For me, it's solved.
Steve, I've got a question for you. The hard drives I've got, they are metal. They're not ceramic. Now,
you sure?
I'm positive. Yeah, I've clipped it with my fingernail, and it sounds like metal. It does not sound like ceramic.
Yeah, but they have sometimes they have an aluminium coating on them.
Oh, well, would it
be? What you'll find is that aluminium coating is then scattered with microscopic particles of cobalt alloy.
Well, whatever the material is, what would we put against it that would, just the friction alone would create static electricity? Would it be wool, silk, nylon, what?
Sorry, I missed that.
Any two dissimilar deals, wool would do it, the hair would do it, fur or whatever. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's just so mind-boggling how simple it is to create high voltage using static electricity. That just it just boggles my mind.
There you go.
You stepped on the barbershop.
You are absolutely 100% correct. Then these drive motors—they're super balanced. They can turn super high speeds and with almost no resistance. And then you put something against it that has almost no resistance and get static electricity. This is—it's plug and play, man.
Yep.
I'm bringing 10 of them. I just went out to the shop a few minutes ago, counting them. I've got about 50 of them, so I'm going to bring you 10.
Well, they use, like in the Van de Graaff generator, they use nylon wheels and a rubber band to create the friction that in turn builds the static charge up, and all it is rubber rubbing against nylon, and then it stores up across some combs onto the top load and basically builds up a massive charge. you sit there and let one of them Vandegraaff generators run for a while, it'll literally jump a foot across the doggone room to you as you walk by with your bare leg. It'll light it up.
Mr. Tessalonian built is 4 foot in diameter.
Yep.
Okay, he's got one wheel going in one direction, one wheel going in the other.
Yep. So that's a Wimshurst. Vandegraaff and Wimshurst work off of pretty much the same concept, but a little bit different as far as mechanical-wise.
Right, but I'm thinking you take two of these motors and let them face each other, one turning one way and one turning the other.
Yep, and all you got to do is reverse the polarity on there to change the direction in which way it's going.
Yep.
It's no big deal. I mean, we got it. I mean, everything we need, we got. Now, it's a matter of, let's do it. I need a crew. I need the dream team to come together, and let's build it. Let's get it over with.
The technology is there. It's been there for the past 10, 15 years. We're just not using it.
Everything
we're talking about is plug and play. It already exists. We just got to buy it, alter it to fit, and put it together. It's plug and play, man.
You need light to grow food. You need heat to stay warm. Light is heat. Heat is light, vice versa. Using the technologies of energy, heat transfer. You can also get air conditioning off of it. You can heat your water, cool your house down. Everything you need is all there. Every single bit of the technology that we need for every bit of comfort that we enjoy as a society, it's all there. Every single answer to every single question, all the pieces of the puzzle are laying on the table right as we speak. And I'm saying, I want the dream team to come together, and I want to just build it. I want to get it done.
Yep, I'm with you.
So there's where we stand. People out there listening in, run over there to shazizradio.com/superchat.html and look at the comments and check out the video links and such, or go over to the YouTube channel. Jump over there on all these different alternative energy researchers and you look at what they're doing. And every time you find a piece of the puzzle, you write it down. And you step back and look at that piece of the puzzle along with everybody else's piece of the puzzle, and you'll start seeing the big picture. The fact of the matter is, we've got everything we need to do exactly what it is that we've been talking about.
What's the closest town to you in Missouri?
I don't know why.
Well, when I come up there, I gotta find you.
Oh, well, we'll get on a Skype call and we'll work it all out. We'll get you directions.
Okay, that'll work.
But, look, you know,
I'll be there Thursday afternoon or Friday morning.
I advertise on my YouTube channel the search for free energy. I believe the search is over. And I think it's time for the alternative energy community out there to put up or shut up. You know, there's a lot of people out there faking free energy devices, and a lot of people out there trying to make money off of free energy devices. I'm saying whatever diagrams I put together are going to come out to the public for free, and that's that. You know, I said free energy, I'm at free energy. I'm not talking about trying to sell anything. I'm talking about trying to better this world by empowering people to know that they can generate their own power, grow their own food, do everything that they need to survive and not have to be reliant on some other nation for fuel or some other source for energy, when you could deliver it just by tapping into what nature's already provided. There's enough wind power out there. There's enough solar power out there. There's enough lightning power out there. There's earth batteries. There's telluric currents in the earth. There are so many methods by which to actually generate power that it is mind-boggling. And if you need a power source for an internal combustion engine, what better source than you can get than water? Hydrogen and oxygen. Separate the two and bam, you've got power you need to run it, and your exhaust comes out fresh water, so now you got another fresh water source. So with that said, imagine how fast you could turn a turbine if you can use high frequencies like Stan Myers did to run his dune buggy to separate the hydrogen and oxygen from each other and use that energy on demand to turn a turbine.
Right.
Well, look at the guy that developed the water hammer that basically turns water into steam.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Well,
Stone Lee just put in there about composting in there. Somebody did.
Wait a minute. I want to tell you guys what I did last winter one time. Now, just for the heck of it, I took, measured it out, and weighed exactly 1 pound of water at regular temperature, and it was 44 degrees. I stuck it in my blender, turned the blender on high, and in 20 minutes, that water was 94 degrees. It raised it 50 degrees in 20 minutes.
That's right.
The thing is, I did not have the blender case part where the water was in. I didn't have it insulated. What if I was to use distilled water and take the motor and the blades out of the machine and put it directly in the water? Distilled water will not conduct electricity. Therefore, I would all the heat that come off of the motor, it would go into the water. Plus, insulated. How much heat could I get then?
It's hard to say because any motion that you create inside there is causing them water molecules to hit up beside each other. So that's why the temperature's raising. It ain't no different than hitting it with a microwave, other than the fact that the frequency is higher than what it is while you stirring it up.
Exactly. And the thing is, water freezes at 32 degrees, yet a running river can be running and it be 0 degrees.
Yep.
The thing is, running water is water bumping into itself. And that's friction, and it creates heat, and it keeps it from freezing.
Yep, the farmers have been doing it for years, using little wind-powered deals to stir the water in the pond up so that the cows can still have water to drink even when it's cold outside and everything else is frozen.
Yes, yes. I mean, dang, come on, man. The technology is here. It's been here. We just got to use it, that's all.
Well, Raymond, can you imagine it being like a 500-piece jigsaw puzzle where everybody holds a piece?
Yeah.
And we've all just got to sit down and make the pattern.
That's it.
And I know Shazia knows how to do this. Make a sonic machine that is so, the vibrations, the cycles are so intense that it would vibrate the water and cause it to actually boil.
Well, you know what? Base is omnidirectional. Base is, goes one way, right?
Right.
And so if you have a bass speaker, the you can literally blow that speaker by turning it up too loud because it just, in the same direction, keeps pounding that diaphragm on there until the diaphragm finally rips. That's a lot of power. There's a lot of torque behind bass speakers.
Well, we make the diaphragm out of stainless steel. We really turn things stainless steel.
But basically what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't matter. It's just we already know the frequency ranges at which to do the work that we're talking about. It's just a matter of designing the system to do it. It's that simple.
I know you've got the knowledge to do that.
So if you can use a frequency such as bass to literally create enough friction in the water, then you'll create the heat that you need.
Right.
So, you know, there you go, man. All it is the vibration interacting with the water itself. So, imagine you got a bowl of water sitting on top of a heavy-duty bass speaker, and that bass speaker's just pounding away at the vibrations inside that water is causing those water molecules to create friction, which in turn creates heat.
Yep.
And if it doesn't take you that much power to generate the bass vibration that you initially do, you see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying, but here's the thing. Other than the sun, water is the most powerful thing on this earth. Third is wind, but the second most powerful thing on this earth is water. It's more powerful than any nuclear weapon.
But
you use it properly.
But all of it combined together, man.
Right.
The forces, the yin and the yang, the fire, the water, the earth, the everything all combined in together is an indestructible power source.
Exactly. And you take this that base speaker and you heat that water till it boils, turns to steam, you use the steam to turn a turbine, to turn make electricity. I mean, come on, man. The technology is here. It's been here. It's not using it.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's solved. Now it's just a matter of putting a device together to shut up the debunkers and the educated idiots.
I love that.
No, they're not educated idiots, Shaziz. They have a piece of paper to say they're clever.
Oh, yeah, well, that piece of paper is going to do them well when we come out there and show them that all their laws of physics just got turned upside down.
I was saying in the chat earlier that back in the early 90s, I had a friend that was telling me that there was plasma in the Earth's outer atmosphere. Now, it's debatable his claims about interstellar travel be using it as a power source. They just float around in the upper atmosphere, collect all the plasma from these invisible tubes, which an Australian scientist has recently claimed exists, and then off they go to zip into Alpha Centauri or wherever. But it's kind of interesting that back in the 90s everybody said, you know, this guy is an absolute weirdo, keep well away from him. But now, what he was telling me in the early 90s has now been vindicated because somebody who's got a piece of paper that says it's clever has said it.
Yeah, if it's their idea, it's right. If it's your idea, you're a nut.
They're an idiot.
If you don't jump through their hoops, how can you ever know anything?
Well, look, I'm not working in the realms of their science community or their laws of physics. I'm working in the realms of what I can test and prove. And if it works to prove out that their laws of physics has a flaw, then so be it. You know, that's the way I look at it. And, you know, like I said, everything out there from the creation of this world all the way to the present has all been theories. That's it. You know, they haven't even got a picture of the electron, so how do we know the electron even exists? So with that said, the super high RPMs, the fluctuation of that magnetic field coming from that little round ceramic magnet was enough energy to light up a full strand of LEDs that normally took 120 volts AC to run, but lit it up just as bright, if not brighter. And if you look inside of one of these hard drive motors and you see how little bit of wire was able to guide that much energy, there is something going on there that does not match with what the book says. You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying.
Absolutely, mate.
Hey, I got a technical question to ask you, Shaziz. You know, I was talking to Scott about using really small wire to build a generator, and that way you get more turns, and he said, well, the smaller the wire, the more resistance you're going to get. But let me ask you a question here. I think you could answer this. How much resistance are you going to get with a single wire, say, for example, 40-gauge enameled wire, and a single strand of that wire with a single magnet going across it?
Well, according to the standard version of how we use it, probably quite a bit. It'd probably catch fire.
No, I'm not serious. I mean, if you move it just bing, one time, bam, across that wire, it's not going to, there's not going to, if that wire is only 1 inch long.
Well, I'm thinking like this. It depends on the frequency range at what you're running it at. If you're throwing 60 hertz through there, you probably get some resistance and some heat. But at this kind of the kind of energy that I'm talking about right here, which doesn't match the standard version at all, the range is different, the frequency is different. It might even be classified as cold electricity before it's all said and done. If it doesn't hurt like heck whenever you get shocked with it. And that's one of the keys that was in Stan Morin's video, was he put an ammeter right on the top of that pole pig on that transformer, and he didn't get the crud shocked out of him. He should have. If he's running that much energy, there should have been some charge built up on that thing. Go watch that video. You know, you couldn't do that on a regular transformer. There's 7,000 volts going through up there. 7,000 volts per wire. And so, if you want single phase, you got one wire. If you got dual phase, you got two wires, and so on. But at 7,000 volts, they got to be careful when they're up there on them bucket trucks to ground themselves and not touch the wrong thing, because they can literally fry themselves at that frequency range that it's going at.
The thing is, those big metal towers with the big wires, They carry a lot more than 7,000 volts.
Well, yeah, but your average household doesn't.
I know.
The energy going to your average household isn't nothing. But it's...
Power coming out of a power plant is over 150,000 volts.
I'm saying that the energy, they're sending more, so much more energy than is necessary to run your house that you can literally take a wireless AC detector and you can go 25 to 30 feet away from that power line and still detect a field. So yep. All that energy is being wasted. What if all you do is send down that that line exactly what you need? The only reason for the doggone line to begin with is it's a guidance system. It's the train tracks.
There you go. That's exactly what it is.
And so with the single wire that you're talking about, who's to say you couldn't just wrap one coil of wire around and get the RPMs up with one magnet and literally be able to produce that much energy just coming off of one magnet? Because all that copper wire is doing is guiding the electricity. Now, if you look inside this hard drive motor and you see the tiny bit of wire that's in there, the size of this doggone stator is so small, and to be able to produce that much energy tells me that there's something else going on. Is the energy actually coming from the magnet itself? That's the question.
That is a good question.
Or is it like the standard version where it says that there's 29 electrons on a copper atom and we're shaking off a loosely coupled electron creating the current flow? It's either one or the other. Or a combination of both.
So, Shazis, what you're saying is, does the magnet produce the energy or does it give it a path to follow?
I think that the copper wire is only the path that it follows. I think that the magnet itself, the magnetism itself, the frequency of the fluctuation of that magnetic field is actually where the power is coming from. And then at a certain point, at a certain RPMs, it literally creates the Venturi effect around that copper wire, that coil, and creates a vacuum that brings energy in from the outside.
That's a pretty interesting theory.
Now, that sounds kind of crazy. If you talk about the standard way that we look at electricity, that sounds crazy. And then people will call me a lunatic and cuss me up and down a storm, but Stan Moore did it with a 50K transformer down into a 25K transformer just for the step-down purposes of the frequency that was actually going into 50K. He used the 50K as a storage device and the 25 as a step-down and was taking 2,500 watts and running things that should have bogged down that generator.
Look, wait a minute. I got a question about the theory of 29 electrons in a copper atom. And you're knocking one off or two. Doesn't that stand to reason that if that were true, that eventually you wouldn't have copper left?
No, because the copper atom, the only thing that's going on inside there is the electrons are trading places. You're not depleting any of them. They're just trading places. They're bumping in each other. Everything, according to the standard model, is two magnetic fields will couple with one another. Everything has its own frequency, so everything, therefore, has its own magnetic field. So every electron out there that comes in contact with another electron, those two fields will couple and become one field, which creates a stronger magnetic field. The more electrons that are coupling together, the wider the field becomes. You see where I'm coming from?
Yes, I do. So the actual explanation of electricity, as I've known it, has always entered that question in my head. What you're saying explains it. If you know something, if you really know it,
you will have exactly the same amount of electrons when you're done as you did when you started. The energy can neither be created nor destroyed. That's in their own laws of physics. You're not depleting that wire. The only time that a copper wire ever fails as far as a conductor and raises the resistance on that copper coil is when the insulator fails. And then instead of having that long, basically number of turns, surface layer, then you reduce that surface layer down to, instead of 1,000 turns, to one turn, because the insulation is gone, and so now you've got essentially a dead short going on in that system.
Hmm.
So if you could keep the copper wire insulated from the insulation ever being damaged, that motor would last forever. It would never go bad. So we have the potential to literally, using exotic materials, build an insulation that can't be destroyed by heat. I mean, look at all the ceramic technologies out there and glass and stuff like that. All you got to do is keep that that wire from touching the wire next to it and keep that insulation going. And as long as that voltage doesn't break over that insulator, then you got a motor that will never, ever go bad. The only thing that ever goes wrong with any electric motor is the insulation fails. That's it. It gets too hot, it burns the wire up, and fails.
You're right.
So, why are we building motors that we know are going to fail at a certain temperature? Why couldn't we build the same motor that would be able to run up to, literally, to the actual extreme of the copper becoming molten and still be able to run? All you need is that interaction between the electrons in order to create that strong magnetic field that we use to repel and attract a stator to turn the motor. You could literally build a conductor, a guider for a guidance system for the electricity that would be liquid. That sounds crazy, don't it? Imagine ferromagnetic fluid running through a hose that goes around a deal, and all you're doing with that ferromagnetic fluid is energizing, using it for a conductor that is energizing the magnetic field. So now you've got a liquid that is acting as the copper wire itself. All you need is the guidance system for that energy to be able to flow, to interact with the electrons. That's it. You talk about a space age piece of machinery. Now you got a doggone a liquid field instead of a copper turn wire.
Shazoos, give me a shout when you've invented a lightsaber. That is the ultimate weed whacker.
Well, that's next on the list because I got to have one myself. Those things are cool, man.
I mean, you think about it. You go out there with a weed whacker and it takes effort. You go out there with a lightsaber and you are a space age gardener.
Well,
you better make sure the grass ain't dry.
Yeah. Either way, the potential's there. I mean, if you can dream it, you can build it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, build it and they will come. So if you have any free energy generation systems, for God's sake, go and tell the government.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The government already knows that it exists. The biggest worry is probably the fact that people out there talking about it and eventually going to stumble on it and build it. That's when they send the men in black in, when you try to put it on the market. We're not going to try to put it on the market. We're just going to give the information away for free.
There you go.
Shaziz, quick question.
What's that?
Can we put a new page up on shazizradio.com?
Yeah?
Because, you know, the experiments I've been doing with artificial light? I haven't really put the plans up anywhere where they can be published where people could use them. And I think there are quite a lot of people out there that have various different designs that they do want to share.
Well, you got access to it. You're a moderator on there, so you could build it.
You see,
a long time ago on a different computer, Shaziz. What I'm looking for is there an interest out there where we can share our designs with each other?
Yeah, there is.
Steve, I'll get the guy's email address and send it to you. His name is Sean. And he's been working for several years, young fella, and he loves growing things. And he's building a little small grow house, 8 foot by 12 or 16 foot. And he came by here to get some lights and stuff from me. But anyway, he's a real nice guy, and he knows a lot about plants like you do. So I'm going to put you in touch with him, and y'all can share.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
I mean, what I want somebody to do is to build the same system that I did.
Right.
Well, see what they can do with that.
You guys take over for a second. I got to go make a nature break.
My whole deal here is I've spent 20 years working with artificial light commercially in Dutch greenhouses, where they produce the largest amount of exported fresh food in Europe, and they are one of the smallest countries in Europe.
what I'm thinking here is, I mean, all the artificial lights you use, they're all fluorescent lights, aren't they?
Oh, a variety of different lights. What I was doing when I was really big into it, because where I'm living now, I don't have a garden, I'm on the 8th floor. So it's kind of awkward to go into any long-term plans. Because if you're going to grow anything, you're looking at 3 months to 6 months, maybe 9 months or a year to turn something around. And I have a year contract on my apartment, so I'm kind of in a difficult situation. But the point being is, for 20 years I've studied this extensively, both in a commercial setting and then privately within my own home. And my deal is if you can provide me with the energy, then I can stick 600 watt metal halide or high pressure sodium bulbs in for the flowering and fruiting range, and really experiment and see what I can do. But the cost of 2.4 kilowatts per hour is way beyond my capacity to fund at the minute.
Well, I think that we can do it.
What I'm trying to get at, Shazia, and that's the reason why I'm going to Missouri next week, is Shazia says he can light 150 fluorescent light bulbs on very little energy and do it wirelessly. And I'm thinking most grow lights are fluorescent lights. And I'm just wondering if his deal will light up a fluorescent grow light. And that's what Sean was interested in.
In fairness, the real serious horticulturalists that are doing it on the commercial level are not using fluorescent strips.
Oh, really?
Well, regardless of that, it doesn't even matter if it's a sodium bulb and a tungsten element in there. At the right frequency range, you can still do it. So, I'm just saying, you know, Tesla was doing it back in the 1800s and the early 1900s. He was lighting fluorescent bulbs wirelessly, you know. And if we sent the energy down the railroad track, so to speak, the copper wire, into that tungsten element, we're going to generate enough frequency to vibrate that tungsten element until it lights up. It's as simple as that.
Hey, she lives.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get bring a couple of my tungsten TIG welding rods.
Cool.
I mentioned that to you before, she did.
Yeah, and you...
You're looking for a source of tungsten.
Well, there we go, man. I'm saying this can be done. From what I've seen with this little hard drive motor, I'm fully convinced more than ever that we got every single bit of answers that we need. See, look, I'm a heretic as far as the standard laws of physics. I'm a rebel against the laws of physics, and in the electrical world, I speak blasphemy. But there's guys out there like Stan Moran who are saying the same exact thing using slightly different terminology than what I'm using, and I'm telling you that man is onto it just like we're onto it, the same exact thing, that there's something more going on than what we were taught in the school books.
Shazia.
Yeah.
Do you have a TIG welder?
All I got is a 110 wire welder.
I'm going to bring my TIG welder, I'm going to tell you why. When you push the button to start, it puts out a high frequency with no heat. In other words, it starts your arc before you even get there. I mean, and it'll throw an arc about 1.5 to 2 inches long.
Well, and there you go. See that? Look, you can take an oil burner igniter, and that arc will burn you. I mean, it will literally burn you. You're talking high frequency, high voltage, and you put it anywhere near the ground. And I've actually put it the ground in water, and you can hear the popping of the hydrogen as that thing is hitting that water. So, we got the potential to not only use water for fuel, to run an internal combustion engine, to turn a generator or turbines that will spin that magnet at such high RPMs that it will literally create a massive amount of high voltage. Now, with that high voltage, we already know, because we've seen the transformers out there and the way that they're designed to step that voltage back down to usable current again. So, as far as I'm concerned, it's a matter of just building it. It's a done deal, you know?
Yeah.
So, all we got to do, yeah.
The only thing that holds us back is our lack of confidence.
I got confidence. I got enough confidence that I'm gonna go put my neck on the line and talk to some guys that I know that own a machine shop to show them a device that we could actually literally build and see if I can get them on board with doing it. Because I believe that these guys right here, I believe that these guys right here have the technology and the tools to literally build what it is that I'm talking about. And if they know that they'll never have to pay another light bill the rest of their life, you think that's not a worthy investment? Just think of the power that they use at that machine shop on a daily basis. Imagine if they could run that machine shop for free and not have to be paying electric bill on it.
Yeah.
So, there you go, man. They'll put it in their shop, and they'll tell their buddies behind the scene, hey, do this. Put it in your shop. Here's the specs. So, as where they're not going to be able to sell this on an open market and make a money off of it in that form or fashion, they'll be able to put that energy to use to literally not have to pay an electric bill, that they will be able to make a larger profit on their stuff that they make because now they're not having to pay to run the machines. You see what I mean?
I love it.
So there's my foot in the door on as far as getting it precise.
Shaziz, the key to energy is the key to our freedom, because once we have energy that we can use in a manner that is not restricted by being delivered down through electricity suppliers, where you have to pay per kilowatt, then our capacity to be able to do all sorts of interesting and wonderful things is significantly enhanced. And that's why I keep coming back. I mean, I've had me times when I haven't been ever able to be around, and there's times when I've really wanted to be here but I've not been here. But the reason why I keep coming back is because I want to see it happen.
I do too.
Hey, Shazir, I've got a few answers on the other side of the coin as well. Well, what you can do with it once you've got it.
Because I'm going to bring one of my X13 motors down. I think you'd be interested in that.
I'd love to see what that thing could do in reverse to raise the RPMs up to its maximum and see what that thing could produce.
Okay, I put one on my drill press. Drill press running 650 RPMs and putting out 118 volts.
Well, there you go, man.
That was open voltage. Now, when I put it on amps, then short. My half horsepower motor would barely turn it.
Yeah, but see, here's the key, Raymond. Yeah. I keep saying this and I keep making people mad. I don't care about current watts or amps at this point in the game.
I understand. But what I'm trying to say is, we study that and we build our own, but use different wire, we can make it put out a lot of voltage and very little amperage.
Yep. And this little bitty gizmo that I'm holding in my hand, this little hard drive motor, proves to me that it can be done. You know, once that doggone RPMs gets up to a certain extent, I can only imagine if you could raise this thing up to an unlimited amount of RPMs before it finally shattered, before the bearing failed on it, of how high you could literally get that voltage. I mean, 360 volts AC out of a hard drive motor.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. What if you got up to about 50,000 RPMs?
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see these things pushed to their maximum limit, to where they literally explode, man. I want to see how far you can push these things before they drop. Because even if I was going to the full 35,000 of that Dremel, you know, it's moving right along, and it's producing 360 volts AC, and I don't believe it was actually going to the full 35,000 RPMs that this thing's capable of. It's minimum is 5,000. It's 35,000 maximum RPMs on this Dremel, and it turned that doggone thing fast enough that we're just pushing 360 volts AC out of a tiny little stator.
Is what sort of connecting cable or band could you put between the hard drive spindle and the Dremel that would manage to survive 35,000 RPM?
Well, actually, I could probably modify a little plate that you could actually screw right directly into the face of the hard drive. If you look on the hard drive where the platter's bolt on, there's like bolts on there that has a little ring that holds another aluminum ring in there. Okay. And so all you'd have to do is make a pattern on that on a coupler and basically be able to screw it right into the face of that Dremel.
What I would suggest as opposed to that is to drill into the top of the spindle with an anti-clockwise screw.
Yeah.
So then you'll get direct drive.
Well, if you got direct drive off of this thing and reach the full 35,000 RPMs of that Dremel, I would love to see how much voltage that thing would put out. Anyway, we're down to it, man. We've already run out our time. It's been a fascinating show, guys. I think we got what we need.
I know, Dickon, what we do.
I can't wait to get started. So, you know, if there's folks out there that are thinkers outside the box and are interested in jumping on there on the bandwagon with us and helping us to literally build a device, even if we have to build one part at Raymond's house and one part at my house and ship them all together to somebody who can put it all together, we can get it done.
I believe that.
And so, you know, with that said, everybody, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. The podcast will be up as soon as possible, and share it with your friends. And if you're out there and you believe in what it is we're talking about, come over and check us out at ShazizRadio.com and Awake Radio and all the other different radio networks that are affiliated, and support them. You know, jump in the chat rooms and talk, and let's get the things out there on the table. The only way we're going to make this world a better place is if we jump up and we do it. So with that said, you guys got anything else?
Yeah, I got three words. E pluribus unum.
Yep. There you go, man. What about
Carpe you? Diem means seize the day. I'm more interested in carpe jugulum, seize the stroke. Tear the backside out of these people that are limiting our quality of life.
That's right. Let's get some of this information to the people that really need it around the world, and let's let them live in luxury as well. You know, that's all I want. All I want is for the scales of justice to be balanced out, and I want other people to have food and water and all the luxuries that the people in the best world's got. And so with that said, we'll make the world a better place one piece at a time. We got the tools, we got the technology, we got the knowledge, and we got the manpower. Let's build it. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 gigawatts!